Thank you. Hi, everybody. I want to start by thanking David for the invitation to spend some time here at Perimeter. It is a real pleasure. So the plan with Horacio was to prepare a couple of talks that will be somehow complementary. The topic is a topic that we have been working for several years, and the two talks hopefully will cover most of the topics, certainly the most important ones. These topics cover some old known aspects of quantum field theory, such as Noether's theorem, the Weinberg-Witten theorem, Kolmogorov-Mandula theorem, anomalies, but also unravel several new aspects, such as the concept of generalized order parameter, classification results, and applications to quantum gravity. So this work, well, this is more like a, it's not like a normal seminar. It's more like a, this one at least is more like a review talk of several works that have been done mostly with Horacio, but also most importantly with Marina, Valentin, Diego Pontelo, Pedro Martinez, and Pablo Bueno. So as it's going to be more a review talk, and also the idea is to set the stage for the next 2 weeks to discuss. Please feel free to not only to question, but also to make questions, but also to discuss. So let me give a very broad context of the type of questions we are involved, which some of them I hope may sound very familiar. Regarding the classification of phases in quantum field theory, it is maybe fair to start with the Landau paradigm. In this paradigm, phases are classified through the behavior of order parameters whose expectation values determine the phase. In the standard paradigm, these phases, these order parameters are typically encoded in local operators of the theory. And while this approach has been, well, not only highly successful, but revolutionary, it is also well known that it fails to determine or to classify several important phases, most notably the confinement phase in the strong interactions. So in recent years, during the past decade, there has been an increased interest in the classification of general phases of matter through generalizations of the notion of order parameter. This increased interest has happened parallelly in several communities ranging from condensed matter physics to high energy physics and quantum information. And to truly succeed in this kind of endeavor, one typically seeks for intrinsic non-Lagrangian approaches. And in this vein, sometimes quantum information techniques might be helpful. So this is one of the main broad questions we are dealing with. Another related question is to find constraints on the zoo of possibilities that one might get, and potentially these constraints will help us to build a certain classification of such a zoo of possibilities. And although I will not be talking about that today, of course we have in mind a better understanding of the, and we believe that these techniques will help taking us there, to a better understanding of confinement, of the its relation with the mass gap. Relations between all these concepts and the bootstrap in conformal field theory, for example, and some notion of generalized modular invariance, which I will talk about today a little bit, and also applications in quantum gravity. Okay, so with this broad context, let me just say that, of course, it's well known, probably more even more here, that important progress in these directions, and maybe also this was a motivation for studying these questions, was made by considering the notion of generalized global symmetries, which was developed by Davide and collaborators back in 2014. Let me say that briefly, very briefly, indeed, this proposal can be described by a certain classification of operators. We have the topological operators, which are basically the generalizations of the generators of the symmetry. We have charge operators, which are in my understanding, are the generalized order parameters in this approach. And we have the notion of global gauge group, which basically can be encoded in the algebra of charge operators. Now, in this talk, we will take a different approach to these questions. This approach is, I hope I will convey that it's based on some of the like most basic features of quantum field theory, such as locality and causality. And interestingly, we don't need to add any more concepts. We just need to deepen our understanding on those concepts. We arrive at these features by thinking about very different problems we were trying to solve. We were thinking in the problems that appear when defining entanglement entropy in quantum field theories with symmetries, or in lattice systems with symmetries. But very soon, after we started unraveling all these features, we realized that that they are, of course, very related to the notion of generalized global symmetry, and it will be good to have this in mind through the talk. Okay, with this, let me describe the plan of the talk. So in the first part is going to be the core, actually, where I will present the general structure, our proposal, which can be framed as a proposal for the notion of generalized order parameter, an intrinsic proposal for the notion of generalized order parameter, and an intrinsic proposal for a notion of completeness in quantum field theory, which I will explain. Then I will show how this all these features are seen in very simple examples of course of important interest, like normal quantum field theories with internal symmetries, or pure gauge theories and applications to characterize confinement. Then I will come back again to the general structure, and I will see how these observations suggest the definition of entropic order parameters that characterize all these phases in quantum field theory. Then there are several nice things about these entropic order parameters that I will talk about, but to start with, let me say that it will be something purely geometric, and I will leave it there. Then if time permits, I will apply all these techniques to a concrete problem, which is the derivation of the universal charge density of states in quantum field theory. And I will end with some summary and with some discussion and outlook. Okay, so let's get started. So to start with, we need some minimal assumptions of quantum field theory. And a fairly minimal set of assumptions appear in the algebraic, or sometimes called the Hart-Kassler approach to quantum field theory. So basically, in this approach, instead of as opposed to the Weidman approach, instead of local fields defined at a point, we consider local algebras. So to every region, to every double cone, I draw it a double cone here, like a sphere, to this green region R, we associate a von Neumann algebra. Now, in the Weidman approach, Einstein causality is defined by stating that local fields commute at space-like distances, which means in the algebraic approach, it just means that the algebra we associate to this region must commute with the algebra we associate with this other region, or written in expressed in different in equivalent terms, we say that the algebra we associate to this region must be in the commutant, inside the commutant, of the algebra we associate to the complementary region. Here, when I put a prime on a region, this means the spatial component, complement. And when I put a prime in an algebra, it means the commutant of the algebra, which means all the operators that commute with that algebra. Yes? These are in practice it doesn't matter, but it's space time. This is a double cone. Yeah, it should be the causal completion. It's not the ball. I imagine some flat space, and I imagine so this is some Cauchy slice t equal to zero, for example, and then this is R, which is the sphere, and then I causally complete in the, what? This is just t equal to zero.
Yeah,
this is t equal to zero slice, but I'm referring to the. What?
No, it's a special complement.
In the special, no, it has to be here. Is the R is also, you also have to complete it. And then of course, if you have an operator here, it might not commute with it, but if you have an operator here, it has to commute.
Okay.
Because it is at a special distance. But what I'm saying is that for the purpose of this talk, this doesn't really matter. We can just look at the t equal to zero slice, and we won't lose any details. But yes, we are always thinking in the causal completion. This statement here, with the algebra of R, it would be the algebra, if you want, of all local operators here, and the algebra in R prime, it would be the algebra of all local operators here and here.
So if I work this time, am I supposed to take these cones also in various places, or it's just only?
Yes. No, you can consider cones everywhere. So you can consider a cone here, for example. Okay, you could consider a cone here, but of course the relation between this cone and this cone is complicated. I don't have the axioms doesn't tell you anything about that relation. The axioms just tell you that if you have a cone, if you start with a cone, then that cone commutes with the complementary cone. It's the only thing that it tells you.
And when you see it's not just when you multiply things, you conjugate to the Hamiltonian and future. I mean, how do you find some operation I can do in this and some other operations?
Here. Let me comment one thing. Just so here, I'm thinking about I am assuming, which maybe was a discussion yesterday. I'm assuming these are von Neumann algebras, in all double cones, okay. And because they are von Neumann algebras, they act in the same Hilbert space, and you can multiply them. I mean, there is a unique multiplication.
And what motivates the assumption?
Ah, yeah. Okay, I'm coming to that.
Yeah,
No, but this is important. I prepare a little bit this, let me just explain this. So why this, I told this is a minimalistic approach, and maybe there are other views. Typically, sometimes we have learned that people think about the algebraic approach as something very axiomatic that assumes many things and that might not be realistic. It's a little bit the contrary. In particular, for example, if you have a quantum field theory that obeys the Weidman axioms, it is known that it implies these small axioms. It is actually the other way around, which is an open problem. The reason that it happens basically is that in the Weidman theory, if you have a set of correlation functions that satisfy the Weidman axioms, then you have the reconstruction theorem. You can build a Hilbert space, and you have the local operators there. And from the local operators, you can build the local algebras. This has been done.
So, to understand how much of the data is something physically observable and how much has been typed or complicated mathematical procedure applied to something physically.
Let me continue. So I prepared this slide a little bit for you. let me just say a conformal field theory, for example, in the sphere, obeying the usual bootstrap axioms, will be a specific example of a Weidman theory, okay, and therefore furnish also a specific example of an algebraic quantum field theory, okay, and of course we could all conformal field theories basically fall in our algebraic quantum field theory. So what I'm going to assume is less than conformal field theory. But also, for example, if I consider a quantum field theory that arises by a certain conformal field theory and apply some relevant perturbation, this will also fall into this case, basically because all the problems that appear in the ultraviolet. So once you assume that your theory has a nice ultraviolet behavior, like it flows to a conformal field theory.
That's what I don't understand, because you mentioned in the space, it's so when you see phenomena somehow Hilbert space is kind of weird.
The Hilbert space, I mean, in the Weidman theory, it is proven to exist. If you assume that's what I'm saying, I mean, of course, I'm not. So let me just let me just say that, of course, here we are assuming some quantum field theory of lower energies, okay? And the Wideman theory is exactly about that. And once you have that kind of model, you can define a Hilbert space and you can define these algebras.
But what kind of theory is in a Stoller phase transition, so I can actually define Hilbert spaces?
But one is basically immersed in the other.
No. If you are thinking perhaps in a if you have a Wideman actions, you can build up the Hilbert space with operators in a small ball as small as you want.
Yeah. Also, it makes most sense to me because I can have a quantum field theory because the scattering states or whatever I can find in the Hilbert space are completely different in each different part.
Those are different variables. But the Hilbert space is there.
No, this was the little Hilbert space is sense translation center.
From the point of view of the IR theory, maybe from the point of view of the...
I don't see him in a bigger Hilbert space, conceptual centers, just conceptual centers.
Yeah, well, depending on what you say, what you mean by conceptual centers, you can say, for example, a state with its density of matter.
All spins up, right? In a spin system, they don't sit in the same Hilbert space.
Well,
there's not a space for these two sit.
Yeah. But this perceptual center you can also see from the structure of the vacuum center. You can also see that.
There's no way that something microscopic.
Well, maybe we can discuss that later. But I'm just saying that. Okay, so you also have problems with the Wideman action. That's good. But I'm just saying that I'm going to take some axioms I'm going to take less axioms than the people usually take. For example, less axioms than in conformal field theory, or less axioms than in.
CFT satisfies those axioms. CFT on a sphere.
On a sphere, yeah. And therefore, if I imagine that the CFT the physics. So if I'm in a ball.
CFT, the sphere doesn't matter.
I will consider just those CFTs that can be defined in a sphere, and what I'm just saying is that if I consider a small ball here, now a small region here, some double cone, the physics here is going to be independent of how I completed of the boundary conditions. So I'm basically describing that physics. It's a way of compactifying the space, which allows me to define what it means. I will just be working with those theories. We can discuss more theories later. Of course, there are, as I say, you could have more general definitions. But maybe if you want, the interesting thing of what I'm going to tell is that many things that were believed, that maybe motivated the introduction of further structure or more generalizations, like the notion of maybe generalized symmetries or other notions like topological field theories, actually they are already within these restrictive actions. You don't need to input anything more. That may be a motivation for the.
We're talking about actions. I think that one of the things that we want to say is that you can think about this algebra or this thing without needing like a very sophisticated mathematical sense. In the same way that people work with field operators without using Wideman actions, well, what we want to convey is that it's useful to think in these other things that are also present in any quantum field theory, this algebra, etc., because they have like
a structure that is very robust. We are not trying to axiomatize the quantum field theory. I'm not going to solve that problem here. Not at all. But that is known that there is an example of theories that can be done. The examples which we know, like a conformal field theory on the sphere, you can do that. The examples that satisfy that with the Wideman actions, you can do that. So, and all the examples that have been realized in nature, we expect that we can do that. Of course, we might not know in practice for the moment, but to assume that it cannot be the case, I think, I will just assume that can be done. I'm just saying that it's not an assumption that we are taking, that nobody is just very normal set in a very broad set of theories. realistic theories it happens. So okay, I will just consider this this box. In this box, one typically assumes a further relation, which is this is maybe more problematic, which is to say that for these double cones, actually this inclusion of algebras, causality just tells you that the algebra in the ball has to be included in the commutant of the complement. But how duality, what it tells you is that it has to be equal. Now, this is a kind of a fundamental axiom. It has been proven in the Rindler-Wedge through the Bisognano-Wittmann theorem, and therefore it has been proven in CFTs in balls. But still, it has important implications. So I will try whenever we arrive in the models, in the examples that I'm going to describe, I will try to show that this is indeed the case just by explicit arguments in each case. There is not a full proof, although this is believed to be the case basically in all non-pathological theories. Okay.
Yeah, but you have a proof for the CFT
involves. Yes, I have a proof for the CFT involves, yes. So it is for whether they are interacting or free, there is a proof for CFTs, for balls in CFTs.
Okay.
Because it follows from the fact that in Rindler-Wedge, so if I'm in the Rindler-Wedge, so if instead of having the ball, I'm in the Rindler-Wedge, then I can prove this relation with R being the Rindler-Wedge due to Bisognano-Wittmann theorem.
The correct statement should be valid for CFT in
Rindler-Wedge. No. In CFTs, then, because it is valid in the Rindler-Wedge by conformal transformation. Okay. So So in retrospective, what we did with Horacio, Marina, and Diego was something very basic and natural that could have been done 40 years ago, which is to explore this approach in topologically non-trivial regions. I'm not going to modify my space-time. I'm just saying that instead of now considering a ball here, I consider, for example, a ring. So the first question that arises is the basic questions in all these endeavors, which is whether we have an algebra for that region or not, whether the algebraic approach assigns an unambiguous algebra to this region. And the answer is that it does. It is the additive algebra, because the algebraic approach assigns, in the algebraic approach we can assign a von Neumann algebra to every ball. We can assign an algebra to R by filling R with all possible balls, and then just defining the algebra of R by the union of all those algebras in balls. This, if we do this for all the regions in spacetime, it yields what is called the additive net. The additive net, a subtlety that will appear later again, is that it might not be the net that defines the quantum field theory, but it is important to remember that it is always there. It is an intrinsic net. So for any quantum field theory, I can just construct it in this way. It's unambiguous. The question now, the next question, so the first question was, the first question was if there is an ambiguous algebra. The next question is, does this algebra satisfy causality? So does this algebra satisfy this now without taking out this ball for any region R? And the reason is yes, because it is constructed by the algebras of balls, which themselves satisfy causality. And the next question is whether the additive algebra satisfy duality. So whether this is an equality or a strict inclusion. It might seem strange at this point, might seem very abstract, but from this observation, from this question, we can already provide an intrinsic definition for generalized order parameters in quantum field theory. So let me which would be basically the theme of the talk. So we define a generalized order parameter in the space that I have been mentioning, the space of algebraic quantum field theories, as an operator that violates duality in a certain region. So another parameter, we will call it a Hack duality violating operator. This observation, conversely, if you want, also suggests an intrinsic definition of completeness in quantum field theory. We say that a quantum field theory is complete if for an arbitrary region of the space, the observable algebra generated by the local degrees of freedom is the maximal one compatible with causality. So this is basically the contrary. So we can rephrase this observation by saying that completeness of a theory is equivalent to the fact that we have only one net, namely the additive net, which is always there. We don't have any more because there are no more operators in the theory. Which means that the additive net satisfies duality, which means that there are no generalized order parameters. I know that this at this point it's very abstract. We are going to see examples, and hopefully we will convey why it comes about. But are there questions about this? Yes.
So, from a theory of the sphere, say that process of the sphere is in the additive one. If I take a sphere and add the little balls from the sphere and I add them up.
Exactly. So this is a consistent definition. So exactly, yeah. This is this relation. Okay. Basically, the fact that when you take the additive algebra in the ball,
yes.
Which is the adding all the balls that are inside, you get the full algebra. There are no more operators. That because this exactly says that there are no more operators that can be associated to the ball that are compatible with causality. It's exactly that. In a ball, I'm going to see how this comes about in like the non-trivial theories that have generalized symmetries. So, but yes, that is very important. That is fundamental. What it might not be the case is that even if it is the case in a sphere, it might not be the case in regions with non-trivial topology. That's the whole point.
What if space is not a topology? If space is a sphere?
No, it's a, so even so so I have two types of region. No, I have double cones which have, let me say, they are topologically trivial. Let me say, okay, and in this case it holds what you just said. So the algebra of all balls inside that. You mean, for example, I put the CFT in a sphere,
yes,
and I look here in a sphere.
I look at the whole sphere.
The whole sphere. In the whole sphere, of course. Yeah. In the whole sphere,
the additive of this.
Yes. That follows from the Weidman axioms. Yes. Yeah. In the Weidman theory, yes. I don't know. In the algebraic theory as well. The important part or the important part of those axioms is the behavior at high energies, like locally. Now, how they scale. How those distributions scale as I put the points together, and those they do not depend whether I put it in a sphere or on a flat space. Okay, so yes, the answer is yes. All the operators are generated by local operators. The question is what happens locally. Okay. And in a way, let me say that. Notice that here I haven't to define what a generalized order parameter is. I didn't include any new concept in the theory. Basically, these generalized order parameters just differentiate between the two basic notions of locality in a theory, namely the one maybe that is most natural, I mean most familiar, which is the fact that operators at a spatial distance commute, with the one that maybe is not so natural for some part of the community, for us it's very natural, that the operators are locally generated by local degrees of freedom. So these generalized order parameters just measure the difference between those two concepts.
So as the region.
Exactly. So an order parameter, and we are going to see examples, but for a moment, keep with me. An order parameter might be, for example, imagine I have some loop operator here, okay, in the ring, and that loop operator, I cannot generate it by local operators in the ring. So it is a hard duality violating operator in the ring. But of course, if I put it in a ball, because all the operators in a ball are generated by local operations, it ceases to be a non-local operator with respect to the ball. So being a non-local operator being a half-duality violating operator is relative to a particular region. In principle, by first principles, there is no half-duality violator.
So one natural thing to do is to sort of think on some sub-manifold.
I'm looking at that. Those are my manifolds. Basically, typically in the generalized symmetry literature, one finds people typically look at, let's say, singular operators, no, like a pure loop operator. What we are saying is that, well, just thicken it a little bit, okay? So to have some region which is a ring, a solid ring, and now ask the question of duality in that region. What?
Your loop operator doesn't live in the
edges of algebra. The loop operator is, this is very important, and it will appear many times in my talk and also in Horacio's talk. The loop operator violates half duality in the ring, but it doesn't violate half duality in the sphere. In the sphere, it can be constructed by local operators, which is very important. So it is constrained by the local operator structure. We are going to see examples if this sounds abstract.
The term local operator is very confusing.
Okay.
Typically used for something is precisely local observable. So saying local observable.
No. For us, I'm not. For us, when I say a local operator, it's always thinking.
It's a cool terminology in quantum theory, but usually when I say local operator in quantum theory, I mean.
It's a point like we call them sometimes point like operators, which are not operators, point like distributions. But when we say local operators, we mean real operators of the theory, right. So bounded operators.
Observable.
Let's call it observable. Local observable. Okay, I'm fine. Let's call it local observable. So these are very good. So what I'm saying is that if I have an operator in a local observable. Associated to a certain ring, okay. This operator might be a generalized order parameter, a half duality violating operator in that observable in that ring, but certainly is not going to be in a sphere that surrounds the ring, because in the sphere that surrounds the ring, I can always build it by local operations. Okay. We are thinking they are all contractible. This is very important point. This is something that is at all considered in the usual literature, that there is a huge difference between loops that wrap contractible cycles and as opposed to loops that do not wrap. And the reason is exactly this, because the ones that do not wrap a contractible cycle, you have a lot of freedom in defining their dynamics. They are not constrained by the local dynamics. But these ones are constrained by the local dynamics. So for example, if you use a Wilson loop to determine the phase of the confinement, you have to take into account that loop is constrained by the local dynamics. So it's a difference. If you want, it's a difference that we are making that is important. That is it has gone a little bit unnoticed. So we won't have anything to say about loops that are non-contractible. We are not interested in those because you have a lot of freedom for those. Those are not defined. The dynamics of those is not controlled, is not determined by the QCD Lagrangian. I mean, the pure Jean-Mies Lagrange, let's say. While the dynamics of loops that are contractible, it is determined by that. You don't have choices. People is confusing the fact that you have choices for the non-contractible ones. They are thinking that they have choices for the contractible ones, but it is not.
You're making an axiomatic statement that quantum field theory is defined immediately by local data.
But what is interesting? Exactly. But I agree. But what is interesting is that it is enough to describe, for example, confinement.
I would have said that the relative quantum field theory is defined by local data, and then the natural quantum field theory. By specifying the extra stuff.
But this is not our thing. It's the way people talk about they say, I put an SU2 theory in this manifold, but they are saying that the SU2 theory that you define in that space, I am putting in this other manifold. Otherwise, it's a different quantum theory, and then nothing's wrong with the other, right? So it's a common language that people use.
Not necessarily about manifolds. Locally,
there is the, it is important to acknowledge that, for example, the Wilson loop is you can build it by local operators. It is important to notice that, just to remember that. It is
when you see this, it's just say compact Wilson line, and it's a CFT state for simplicity, then I can just do an OP and write it as a.
Exactly. So you don't have choices. That's what we are saying, basically. And it's something that it goes unnoticed. The people is not giving that importance, and it's very important. As we, for example, in the ABE anomaly, that is what shows you that it cannot be non-invertible locally. It is exactly that. The essence of the anomaly is exactly the fact that the TOF loop will be constructed from the chiral field. If you think that the TOF loop is something that you put from that was not in the theory you put is an extra ingredient, well, then you will not realize this the physics. That's the we are just making it's a detail that is not it's just a detail that people have not thought about. That is the fact that there are two classes of loops, the ones that are contractible and the ones that are not contractible. And typically, in the theories of interest, the ones that are contractible are much more constrained than the ones that usual literature talks about.
But from my perspective, you didn't say that you are trying to be agnostic about the SU2 or SU3. Each theory you're trying to make contact with some line in the fundamental. From my perspective, the thing in the SU3 gauge theory has a topological
structure. Exactly, correct.
But if I just look at the local algebra, they look completely identical.
Exactly, correct.
But I still would call this a three-dimensional theory is different.
Oh, okay. But that's a definition. No, but that's a definition. It's the action that you're putting. We are happy with that. I mean, but it's important to remember, even with the definition, that the local physics doesn't care about the definition.
No.
It's just unique. Right. It's one.
Notice that if you just look at the chiral algebra, for example, from your perspective, it would be a theory, even if it does not have a unique conformal block. So your definition of a theory.
We will talk about 2D CFTs. We will talk about 2D CFTs where all this is very clear, actually. Our approach in 2D CFTs, if I arrive, if not, we can talk later. in the 2D CFT case, it is crystal clear. It's an example, a very good example of all these things. It's crystal clear. I will arrive to that. It's a very good example because everything will agree. We will agree about the axioms and we will see just the difference that I'm mentioning, and maybe hopefully we will agree. So let's take a. Okay. So what can we say about non-complete theories? So what we to ease a little bit the notation to explore the consequence, let me call this algebra is the commutant of the local algebra in R prime. In the complementary, let me call it the maximal algebra in R. I call it the maximal algebra in R because it is the maximal algebra I can associate to R while still consistent with causality. Now, what we are saying is that in any quantum field theory, we have to every region, we don't have only one algebra, we have two canonical algebras. One is the additive one, this is the intrinsic, and one is the maximal one. Another is the maximal one. The additive is included in the maximal. And if the theory is not complete, what it means is that the maximal, it has to be the case that the maximal is equal to the additive plus some non-locally generated operators, these hat duality violating operators. These are the generalized order parameters.
So is it a set of only one element here?
What?
Do you mean that this set A has only one element?
No. A hat. What I was saying is that the well-defined notion is not the one of HDV operator because you can have many HDV operators. The well-defined notion is the class, and the class we define a class of a hat duality violative operator. We say that A tilde belongs to the class of A if A tilde can be written as A times operator in the local algebra. So basically, if I have a region. I have a region. I have you can think of the local operators in, of the local observables in the region to be like the identity class. And if I have a hard duality violating operator, I can define a class associated to that operator by multiplying, by multiplications with the identity class, which all the additive operators. That is the well-defined notion. I'm just making a quotient, basically, of the maximal algebra. If you want, I'm making a quotient between the maximal algebra and the additive algebra.
Okay.
To define classes.
So what is the precise definition of order parameter here?
Order parameter is any operator, the classes. Basically, any operator in a class is a generalized order parameter. What we are saying is that this is something simple. Let me just say, so if you have a Wilson loop, people say, okay, the Wilson loop, for example, I have a Wilson loop here. This is an order parameter for confinement. But how do you know that the loop is exactly like this? And if I multiply, for example, a local operator very near the loop, This is also going to be an order parameter for confinement, no? So the true order parameter for confinement is the class of the loop by the local operators. Okay, this is something that okay. In other way around. I mean, in different ways, it is really taken into account in all the literature. Yeah.
So could you also one can find in the intermediate Schur's factor, which is smaller than one and bigger than the other.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. But it would be not big. It would not be like so much canonical. Yeah. Yeah. There are intermediate notions.
That's a good way to think about that. It's interior.
Completely. I will talk about that. Yeah. Yeah.
This is like an anomaly.
Anomalies. Horacio.
In a very generalized sense, and then you can think about.
Maybe we can discuss that. I never thought about that interpretation. The interpretation I'm going to, I think the one that we think is that this order parameter is just what it's telling is that there is a generalized symmetry, and if you have two classes of order parameters, then you might have anomalies, which is what Horacio will talk about next week. The first consequence, this is a very important consequence. The first consequence of this structure is that if duality is violated in R, so if we have a generalized order parameter associated to a region R, then we also have then duality is also violated in the complementary region. The proof of this is a one line. Proof using Born-Newman double commutant theorem is very direct, and it implies the existence of further order, or if you want to call them disorder parameters and classes in the quantum field theory. So if this structure holds in a region R, then we have this same structure, dual structure, in the complementary region.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If that loops your triangles on a sphere, then the complementary region is a couple of balls.
Two balls have a non-trivial pi zero. That's very correct. I'm going to discuss that example in a few slides. This is very important. Result just that is very direct. So in all systems that we know, we always find typically order and disorder parameters. And one could ask can we have a theory just with disorder, just with order parameters and no disorder? Okay, and here it directly shows that this is impossible. If you have the set of operator the A's, you will have the B's. Okay.
Is it possible to organize the structure as a topological field theory?
Yes. Yes, it would be, I want to discuss that with you, I think this structure is exactly the structure that arises in the symmetry field theory, without the boundary condition.
Yes.
So another thing that one can prove directly from Born-Newman double commutant theorem is that if you have a violation of duality in R, so you have the A's, then you have the violation of duality in R prime, you have the B's, but also that the A's and the B's cannot commute with each other. So there is a kind of a very insightful So this, you can think about these variables, A's and B's, as quantum complementary variables. And there is a very insightful quantum uncertainty relation that constrains the statistics of these two order and disorder parameters. That it has not been, again, we think is pretty fundamental, and well, we are thinking about in these directions in several ways. So we are going to deepen in a moment in this. Before that, let me just say that the fact that they don't commute exactly suggests an interpretation. Suggest the interpretation as I was mentioning. You can decide that, for example, the A's act on the B's and generate local generalized symmetry transformations, or the other way around. You can decide the B's act on the A's and generate local generalized symmetry transformations. We will see that examples actually exactly conform with this interpretation. And the nice thing of this interpretation is that it provides a quite useful unification of order parameters and generalized symmetry transformation. Basically, from our perspective, from this local perspective, they are both different faces of the same coin. And also, if this interpretation is correct, which we prove in this article, but I won't have time to. If this interpretation is correct, it means that non-completeness in a theory implies the existence of a generalized symmetry, or the other way around, completeness in a theory implies the absence of generalized symmetries. And this unifies previous false theorems in quantum gravity, namely the completeness principle of Polsinski and the absence of generalized symmetries. And let me remark that this is intrinsic and in. It doesn't, when I talk here about generalized symmetries, it doesn't mean they have to be unitary, or it can be anything. So it applies to invertible, non-invertible, whatever.
Q-theory is fundamental and built on a very generalized symmetry.
What?
Like, H-theory is fundamental, and there is a loop of theorems.
That loop, no, in a gauge theory with fundamental math, yeah, I'm going to discuss that in sample in a moment. Can you? There is no generalized symmetry there. Is what? No, no, are complete. Exactly. I'm going to tell in a moment. Yeah, that is a very good point. Let me go to the examples now. So, before going to the examples, let me remark again this kind of a strong property that for balls we don't have this problem, and this implies that all the HDV operators, namely all the generalized order parameters, are generated by local operations. So we are going to see this in a moment. So let's discuss examples, which I hope they will clarify some of the things we are saying. So in this approach, we always it's very important that we always look at the observable algebra, which means the algebra that is neutral with respect to the symmetries. Okay. So one could think, well, if I look to the neutral algebra, how I'm going to see the symmetry if the symmetry acts as the identity in that neutral algebra. And the point is that you can still see it. How you see it? You see it exactly by these violations of duality. So in these theories with global symmetries, there are violations of duality in regions that are two disconnected double cones, so regions that have a non-trivial pi zero.
Why do you say that observable
set to be neutral? No, you can.
You can look at that. Let's you can. It doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be.
It's not a theory first, it's
just observable. Why is not a theory? That I don't understand. It's a
relative. So you jump up,
it's not going to be?
It's not very relative. I mean, there is no operation I know that can project it to one invariant observable symmetry. I think I cannot gauge it.
No, that there are also, for example, in 2D CFT, you could think as the stress tensor algebra as a theory for C equal to 1/2.
No, yeah. It's not a theory.
Yeah. It's not a modular invariant theory, but it's a.
No, it's not even relative. It's like,
but what does it mean relative?
It's in dimensional space of more blocks.
It is a theory that satisfies the. It is a theory that. Well, that's what I was saying. That is a minimalistic approach. I'm just looking at about for, at the theories that satisfy that have some local.
It's just the terminology, but I think using the theory for just the classical algebra is something that is some samples and no chart, it's a fairly bad terminology.
No, I don't
think
that's
an opinion.
I think you learn a lot of things thinking
about that. No, you learn a lot of things by thinking about the kernel algebra.
No,
not the theory.
Because you said it's a sub algebra of many different theories, and then you
learn the structure.
No, why not?
Well, this is just we can call it a model or how you want to call it?
Algebra.
An algebra, okay, fine.
It's
the chiral algebra, okay, that's fine. Yeah. So, let me see where we were. Okay, so we look at that part, at the orbifold part of the theory, that neutral part. And in this neutral part, there is the violation of duality in regions with non-trivial pi zero, and dually in regions with non-trivial pi d minus two. And what is the reason? The reason is that I can construct this operator, which are intertwiners. If I have a local, an operator transforming in some irreducible representation, I can construct this now neutral operator. This neutral operator is neutral, and therefore is part of this algebra, but it cannot be created locally in this region, in the two regions. It's not part of the local algebra in the region. And dually, we have the twist operators that are like the global symmetry transformation, but that act only locally here in this green part. Okay. Already these operators contain all the information about the symmetry, about the global symmetry in the full theory. Okay, contain all the information about the full theory because this twist can be constructed out of the
are
liable by the conjugation classes.
No, it's huge. I mean, here I thought that is a bit so the boundary conditions of the symmetry operator are very complicated things as reaches the space of theory some other dimension lower, and there is no canonical one. There's no way you're gonna say, oh, this is the endpoint of symmetry difference. So there is one theory.
I think here we are using different nomenclature. This is very clear. I'm not ending what I'm ending here.
This double G, I mean, the symmetry transformation only on, maybe I can understand what you're saying, but only on the inside. So at the boundary of this,
it doesn't matter how you do it. There are infinite number of ways, but all those ways.
So that's not a single double G.
Of course, it's exactly what I was saying. Come back to one moment. So the important thing is the class. The tau g, of course, there is not a single one. Here you should think about classes, and of course, if you have a tau of g, you can build another tau of g by multiplying by local operators in the blue region. So there is an infinite number, but the classes are not infinite. The classes are exactly given by the labeled by the conjugacy classes. So this is the same with the charge operators. If I tell you how many charge operators you have when you say we have a charge, it is exactly the same. There is a bracket. Yeah, sorry. There is correct. There is a bracket around. This is a representative, if you want. There are infinite representatives exactly by multiplying by local operations in the respective regions. The important thing is that you can choose representatives. I mean, the classes have certain fusion rules, and you can choose representatives so that the fusion between these representatives are the fusion of conjugacy classes, and the fusion between these. That's not obvious. We construct it in the paper. Yeah. That's not obvious. No, that's not obvious. We construct it in the paper. Yeah.
It's almost the same if you're canonical representatives.
There is a canonical. I mean, there is a canonical representation using something called the split property, and you can do it. Yeah.
Okay.
No. This is. I understand your point, but it can be done. We can discuss the details later. In a way, but I'm not, still, even if you can do that, I'm not. These are not canonical for me. I mean, I think that the right notion is the class still, but you can build those operators. You can build those particular representatives. They say that in this case, it's very clear why the HDD operators, while non-local, for example, these intertwiners, this intertwiner here, while non-local in the green region, if I consider now a green region that goes around the both, I can see it as a local operator, and it's because they have nice multiplication properties. Again, you need to choose some representatives, which I think maybe you won't be happy. I mean, you. but they exist. I mean, this is the construction of the Doppler, Hag, and Robert, that basically you can choose representatives to satisfy the algebra. I mean, the so-called the Kunz algebra, which is basically the algebra of partial isometries. I'm just using the fact that they can be chosen to be partial isometries. The locality of the twist follows easily. There is another current, because if there is another current, I can integrate the current over the green region. And but if there is no current, it is a little bit more complicated. But
exponentiate
the integral. Yeah.
That's when non-unicity happens.
What?
That's when non-unicity happens.
Exactly. Because you need to end. Yeah. Totally. You need to end, and you need to put the smearing function. And you have infinite choices for the smearing function. You just know that it has to be one in the region, but then how it decays, exactly. But the point is that the interesting thing is that for the constraints of the symmetry and the important consequence of the symmetry, basically it doesn't matter what you take. Okay. So for gauge theories with generalized symmetries, the natural expectation is that they will violate duality in a ring, so in a region with non-trivial pi 1, and duality in a region with non-trivial pi d minus 3. And this is exactly what we find. So for example, for the Maxwell theory, we can build what you mentioned before, like a topological surface, what people usually call topological surfaces that are just magnetic flux over an open surface bounded by the ring. And then we do that for the electric field and for the magnetic field. In this case, all these operators, no matter what is Q or G, so Q and G, the charges of these topological surfaces can be anything in the reals, are generalized order parameters because they violate duality due to generalized current conservation. Basically, if I have one of these operators, if I have one of these operator integrated over a surface here, and of course, I could construct the same operator by integrate over a surface here, and then this proves that this operator commutes with all local operators outside the ring, all local observables outside the ring. This means that the algebra of generalized order parameters is R times R, like a very simple algebra by multiplication of A times A, and very simple B times B, and the cross algebra is this one here, is the Heisenberg algebra, which is exactly, it can be exactly interpreted as a generalized symmetry transformation, as I mentioned before. Notice here that the symmetry, I mean, we'll comment in a moment, the symmetry turns out to be R times R, keep with me in a moment. The other example, coming back now to your question, is non-abelian gauge theory. And one would say, well, the natural guess in non-abelian gauge theory is to take for the A's, the ones that violate duality in the ring, is to take Wilson loops in all representations, in all irreducible representations. And one has to take care with that because one has to ask first whether all these are really violate duality. They cannot be generated locally or not. And if you have some charged particle, dynamically charged particle in some representation, then the Wilson loop will not violate duality because it now can be generated locally by multiplication of Wilson lines around the ring. So, for example, in the case of non-abelian gauge theory, because the gluons are charged under the adjoint, the Wilson loop in the adjoint and the Wilson loop in all representations that follow by products of the adjoint, these are locally generated. They are local operators in the ring. They don't violate duality. Okay. So the set of generalized order parameters, the set of HDV operators, is the quotient between all representations and the ones generated by the adjoint, which is known to be the dual, the Poincaré dual to the center of the gauge group. So it's basically the center of the gauge group. The dual ones, the B's, are given by electric fluxes over the center of the gauge group. These are just what one would called the top loop. And showing in this case that the Wilson loop is a local operator is not easy, and in a ball, and it can be done explicitly in the lattice. We do it in the paper. It is not simple because in the abelian case, one just need to take into account, let's say, small Wilson loops will form big Wilson loops. So you only need to take into account magnetic variables. But in the non-abelian case, actually, to form big Wilson loops out of small ones, one needs to take the electric fields as well. So it's kind of a complicated proof. But in the continuum, I mean, or in the lattice, there is a very simple argument given that the electric flux is local, and we can join that with von Neumann double commutal theorem. Let me just mention the connection with the generalized global symmetry story, which maybe is already clear. We have seen that the additive net does not satisfy duality because of the existence of these generalized order parameters, for example, the existence of these topological surfaces. We can think and adding a maximal number of HDV operators compatible with causality such that duality is restored. Okay, and this is exactly basically this gives you Dirac quantization condition. This one can prove that this is equivalent to the Dirac quantization condition, and that's why we call these nets hard Dirac nets, and they coincide with what people call the global gauge group in a gauge theory, okay? But it's important to notice that the local physics, so if one seeks the question like, what are the symmetries that applies to a local region, because the local region pertains to all the theories, the local physics is constrained by all the global gauge groups, okay? And this is, if there are more symmetries, it's better to take those into account.
I should say that the big concept of global gauge group is only true if you use the definition of global gauge group that goes beyond the standard one, like the lines.
Oh, sorry, what?
See. Information gauge theory, right?
Yeah.
Say gauge group in the sense of just the global form of the group is not enough to give you
I mean exactly. Sometimes the global gauge group is exactly defined by saying what are what you call the genuine lines. That is enough, no?
Yeah.
So it's very much the same to specify in a hard Dirac net. What I'm saying is that in a way, that locally there are more order parameters and more symmetries than these ones, because locally all the choices apply locally, constrained locally. This is very clear exactly in 2D CFTs. 2D CFTs are very much like the example of a global symmetry, of a zero form symmetry that I mentioned before, because the violation of duality happens in regions with non-trivial pi zero, so in disconnected regions, basically due to the existence of vertex anti-vertex operators that violate duality in the disconnected region. But it looks also very much like the symmetries in pure gauge theories, just the samples that I mentioned, because there are many different completions. So for example, if I think in the chiral algebra for central charge 1/2, then I can have many different type of theories or completions. Particularly, I can have and in this case, what is called, I mean, the notion of hard Dirac net, and this is something that will appear hopefully soon, the notion of hard Dirac net is exactly related to modular invariance. Okay, and this suggests a kind of maybe that some concept like this, like hard duality violation, might be behind the generalization of modular invariance to high dimensions. Let me say that in this case all these structures are non-trivial fusion rules, and this exactly conforms with the old result by Doblitz and Hack and Roberts that the reconstruction theorem does not apply in two dimensions.
Is that you have more than one?
Yeah, you have more. Okay, how much time I have? I think maybe I'm going above time.
I will organizing also because I was in that's the other question, so
okay.
He can help with
okay, thank you. Well, please feel free to leave. okay. So let's come back to the general structure, and let's step on this robust quantum complementary structure that I started discussing between the A's and the B's. And this quantum complementary structure turns out to be nicely described in the following way. So in the upper part, in the upper left part, I put the maximal algebra in the region R. This is the local one plus the hat duality violating operators. And in the upper right, I put the local one. And these two can be seen to be connected by, can be proved to be connected by what is called a conditional expectation. A conditional expectation is just the analog of a projection in a Hilbert space, but for algebras. Okay, so basically the job of the conditional expectation is to kill the hat duality violating operators. If I take now the commutant of the local algebra in R, I get the, by definition, the maximal algebra in the complement. So it's the local algebra in the complement plus the HDV operator in the complement. And if I take the commutant in the upper left, I get by definition the local algebra in the, here should be R, the local algebra in R. No, the local algebra in R, no, this is correct, the local algebra in R prime. And these two are connected by a conditional expectation, a dual conditional expectation, that whose job is to kill the dual hat duality violation operators. Now, these inclusions are examples of what they are called, they are typically in the algebraic literature, they are called long or rare inclusions. And if the if we have a state that computes the expectation values for all these algebras, if we have a global state for all these algebras, then this, well, we call this a quantum complementary diagram, because actually this is nice that this can be also used to, it's not only in quantum field theory, we can use it to define usual uncertainty principles and usual quantum complementary variables in quantum mechanics. This quantum complementary diagram suggests the definition of the following entropic order parameters. So we have two entropic order parameters, one for the upper part and one for the lower part. They are relative entropies, both, and both of them are computed in their respective maximal algebra. So the entropic order is in the maximal algebra of R, and the entropic disorder is the maximal algebra of R prime. And these relative entropies measure the difference between the state in which we were interested in, could be the vacuum in quantum field theory, and the state in which we have integrated out the hat duality violating operators. In other words, it measures the difference between the state we are interested in and a state in which we put by hand the expectation values of the hat duality violating operators to zero. Now, these order parameters are kind of you could think about them as very subtle notions of the uncertainty of the generalized order parameters. And you could ask, well, why to use this very subtle notion instead of more conventional notions like entropy or like, or even more conventional like expectation values? And the reason is that there is a kind of an insightful relation that can be proven between the entropic order and the entropic disorder. It's very simple. Very simple to express. It is just that the sum of the two is equal to the logarithm of the what is called the Jones index or the algebraic index of the conditional expectations. This index is can be defined for all types of algebras, as was shown in these three seminal papers. And basically, in the language the physical literature, it would be, when in applications to these quantum field theories, it is typically the quantum dimension of the category. So it would be, for example, for a finite group global symmetry, it would be G, the number of group elements, or for in two-dimensional CFT, it would be the total quantum dimensions of the fission category. Okay. So this this is interesting because this Jones index, in this way, measure it is a very rigorous measure of the size of the hard duality violating operator algebra, and therefore of the generalized symmetry, and this relation tells us that actually the statistics, I mean, if you want, in pure case theories, the statistics of Wilson loops is related by the statistics of top loops. Okay, so this is something we think that might help in different directions. Okay, so having said this, let me go to see how this characterizes the phases of the theory. So when characterizing phases, let's think for the moment in four dimensions and in pure gauge theories. We typically observe three types of phases. So we observe the conformal phase, in which both order and disorder show perimeter laws. We also observe, let me call it disorder symmetry breaking. The name is not so important. In this case, the top loop decays with an area law, and the Wilson loop can be renormalized can be defined to be constant. And in the confinement phase, we have the opposite thing. The Wilson loop decays with area law, and the top loop is constant. Now, two things. The first is that, of course, all this kind of structure, this kind of characterization of phases, can be generalized for any dimension. We just need to define a generalized notion, let's say a generalized perimeter law and a generalized area law. Similar scalings can be observed with entropic order parameters. So this is not very surprising. This is not very surprising. What is interesting is that, in principle, one could ask if this is all what it is there in quantum field theory, basically. If this is all the possible phases in quantum field theory. I don't know if you think this is... Well, you have also a topological field theory, I mean, like a vacuum, this is gap, yeah. This is, for example, the confinement phase is a gap phase. If this is all what it is in quantum field theory, would you say that it is, or would you say that it's proven that it is, or would you say that there are more things? For example, let me say a concrete question. Is there a phase in quantum field theory in which I have area law for the Wilson loop and area law for the top loop? Exactly. So those are the type of classification results that maybe we can resolve by with this certainty relation. Because in principle, there should be implications. If, for example, I assume that the Wilson loop that controls this parameter decays with area law, maybe there is a constraint. This entropic order cannot be anything because they have to sum log of the quantum dimension, and therefore it has to decay a certain way. Okay, and this in the paper we have a very heuristic argument which we are improving at present, but let me recall it because it's quite suggestive. So imagine we are in this phase, in the disorder symmetry phase. So the top loop is going to decay with an area law, or we expect that. The entropic order disorder parameter is going to be bounded by, so I pass the order to the right, and this disorder is going to be bounded then by this quantity. Now, this quantity can be computed in several ways, but one is to choose a subalgebra of the maximal algebra that is, any subalgebra will serve. But we have to choose the algebra that serves better to our purposes. So we can choose an algebra that basically are all these thin Wilson loops going or crossing the surface. And because they are thin, they can cross all over the surface. And if the system is gap and the Wilson lines are uncorrelated, then one can prove that actually a constant law for the Wilson loop will imply an area law for the top loop, which suggests that that these are all the phases that one can have. The only thing I have to tell more. What? Yeah, no. I think I prefer to stop here. I was just going to say that I was going to in principle to tell this application of the universal charge density of states, but I can discuss with whoever is interested. Let me just finish here with a summary and discussion. So basically, if there is something that you might want to take home, is that there's a kind of a very simple and we believe profound definition of generalized order parameter as hard duality violating operators. This has many consequences. It's really simple. I mean, at the beginning it might look a little bit abstract, but it's really, really simple. And There is a lot of things that one can play, starting just from that. Like, for example, the derivation that the disorder parameters have to be there, the derivation of the entropic center principle. And what Horacio will tell will be a lot of constraint that arises when one try to mix this kind of order parameters. And there is a lot of obstructions to mixing. And for example, the Weinberg-Witten theorem can be exactly seen as such an obstruction. And Noether, and through such observation, one can relate it to the proof of Noether theorem in quantum field theory and understand why these ABEA anomalies can be understood in terms of conventional symmetries. So this maybe will be the topic of Horacio's talk. More looking into the future, we expect that we will be able, through this type of, basically this type of arguments or this type of observations is what was missing in the literature around the Weidman axioms and around the algebraic axioms to make a bridge between the two. Basically, this observation that these generalized order parameters can be there, we expect that this will teach exactly what are the difference and equivalence between these two approaches. And it is interesting to try to deepen these relations between confinement and the mass gap using these techniques. And as I said, it would be nice to discuss maybe this notion. It is very clear for us that this notion of hot-duality violations in two dimensions, this will appear soon, is related to modular invariance. Basically, when we have hot Dirac nets, we have modular invariants. And it might be it might be the way to generalize the implications to high dimensions. So this is something completely to discuss. So thank you very much, and excuse, thank you for letting me go over time. Yes.
So you said that the existence of these hot Dirac nets are related to modular invariants in 2D, but I didn't really understand how.
This is something that is going to appear soon. So it's some new work that it will appear soon. So let me just say that it's something that I think you know well. So what is it? So let's look at this example. So this example is the chiral algebra with C equal to 1/2. This would be the 1-1. It's the stress tension. Okay, and now we can start at vertex operators. Okay, we can for the moment just ask that those vertex operators, each time I add one, I have to add it has to close an algebra. So if by multiplying those two I get another vertex operator, I have to add it. I cannot okay, and and they have to commute between each other, and that is basically the game. And you can construct this type of diagrams, and you always arrive to the when you arrive to the modular invariant one, it's exactly this is the core. So basically, exactly to prove that you cannot add more, you look at you can look at the index of the two intervals. So at the index at the violation of hot duality, and check that it is. So let me ask it in another way. Sorry, I'm being very bad in my answer. So imagine you have a modular invariance. The question you want to ask is if I can add another operator while still being consistent with locality. That's the question you want to ask. And the question is how you can prove that is not possible, okay? And the way to prove that is not possible is if you can prove, is exactly if you can, sorry, let me see. If you can, if you prove that, that you, well, okay. So if, yeah, I think that is a game between the two segments. Let me explain it in the case of. With the pure gauge theory case is very simple, no? You want to add a maximal set of genuine lines in both sides, so that still all commuting, Okay, and the way to do is exactly to fill the, let's say, the Dirac quantization condition completely. And exactly in the moment in which you fill the Dirac quantization condition, there is not hard duality violation because you cannot add more operators. So the way to look for that fact, maybe in an intrinsic manner, is to just ask the theory if it violates duality, if it still violates duality or not.
Essentially, the modular invariant cases are exactly the ones that do not violate
actual.
That's the point.
So it is an intrinsic way of answering that question. Maybe we can discuss it later. But the result is exactly that. Exactly that modular invariance is equivalent to hard duality not being violated, and that means you cannot add more operators. You cannot further complete. You cannot grow here in this direction anywhere.
Interesting. Thank you. Any more questions? Get back to speak again.